This is Kate Magruder with Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. In the early 70s, a knot of recent college graduates with Stanford diplomas in hand came up with an audacious plan, not to go into professional careers or even to get jobs at all, but instead to move to Mendocino County and create a new school for K through 8th graders. Located on 43 acres in the oak-studded hills west of Ukiah, Mariposa School educated more than 1,000 students over 29 years, making it one of the longest-running alternative schools in the state. One of those Stanford grads was Gina Campbell, now of Ukiah. Gina tells us about the early days and realizing teaching wasn't the right fit, and how the community and the spirit of the times helped her forge her own path as a carpenter, drafter, and residential designer. Gina helped build the main school building at Mariposa School and the Ukiah Playhouse, two architectural gems beloved by the community today. With a sense of humble wonder, Gina says she created her own career, colored herself in as a young woman, becoming a builder instead of a teacher, and how it could have only happened here.
I came here in March of 1971. I went to college at Stanford. Our senior year, a fellow student in my class named Dave Foreman had a seminar on education that he led, and he was very interested in alternative education. So the seminar featured information about places like Summerhill. Out of that seminar, a group of people wanted to start a school, and Kathy Easterbrook, who had gone to high school in Ukiah and her family owned Rancho Mariposa in Redwood Valley, was involved to some extent. I was not in that particular seminar, but I was friends with several of the people who were. So I'm pretty sure that's how Mariposa School started. I graduated in 1970, and most of the people who started the school also graduated. After I graduated, I had married Billy Jameson, and we decided to move to Berkeley with our really good friends, Kate and Kit Anderton, who had also graduated from Stanford. And we went to Berkeley. I started getting a teaching credential at Berkeley. Billy was working in San Francisco as a carpenter. Kit was getting his teaching credential, and Kate was teaching kindergarten. We just all felt kind of at a loss in Berkeley. I know that I did. I actually dropped out of my program and didn't know what to do. And Kit kept going on his program. A really good friend of ours, Pete Barker, was one of the people who had started the school, came to visit and said they were thinking of expanding the school and wanted more teachers and encouraged us to consider coming to Ukiah to work at the school. We had already decided that we were leaving Berkeley, and we just hadn't decided where we were going to go. But we ended up visiting the school, and we were talked into moving up. Kate stayed in Berkeley and finished out the year of her contract as a kindergarten teacher.
And so describe the first, where physically were you? Where was Mariposa School first off?
The school started at Rancho Mariposa. Kathy Easterbrook Monroe, now, family owned the ranch, and her parents had been educators. And so they were interested in helping out with the school, supplying a place for it initially. So it was an old ranch. There were old buildings, one main house and several smaller cabins. And there wasn't enough room for everybody who was teaching there to live on the ranch. So there were four people when we moved there. There were four people who were living off the ranch. And there wasn't room for us. So the Frys, who lived next door, offered their land as a possibility to have some kind of structure, small structure built. So we built some platforms with plastic tents on them. And Billy and I lived in one, and Kit lived in another. We lived there for the rest of the spring, from March until June. We lived on the Fry's property up in the woods above the Fry homestead.
How did you heat that tent?
There was no heat. we had a Coleman lantern, and that was it. We had a bed. I mean, it was very small. It was just small, big enough for our double bed. And I think we had it was up on a plywood platform. We could put things underneath it, but that was it. No heat.
And then what happened?
After the first year, the school had to move. Kathy's parents decided they didn't want to have the school on their property. It was more than they had bargained for. So we moved the school into town to the Episcopal Church on Orchard Street and expanded the school as well. The reason that we had come was to expand the school. So we added a high school. I should go back. Mariposa started as a K through 8 school, and there were 30 students in the original school. And I think we went up to maybe 70 students for the second year, and that was stressful. So other teachers had come. Buzz Hamburg, he joined us in the fall of 71. Michael Laybourn also. Buzz was an elementary school teacher. That's how he met Carrie. Anyway, yeah. Being in town was really stressful. We were used to having the kids be able to just roam around the ranch when we were in Redwood Valley. So after just a few months at the church, we were able to find a place on Highway 20, and we moved the school out there for the rest of the year. So half the year in the Episcopal Church and then half the year in this place out on Highway 20. And meanwhile, we started looking for land. We ended up buying this place on Low Gap, which is where the school ended up for another 25 years or something.
How did you afford to buy land?
Well, our Stanford connections, basically. We tapped into some people who were interested in education, and I had a friend whose family had a foundation. They supplied some money for 3 years, I think. And then there were a couple other connections. And in 1972, when we actually bought the land, it wasn't very expensive. I think it was like $25,000 or something. And of course, we made a down payment and had a mortgage payment. I want to back up too and tell you a little bit about the finances, because we made almost no money. We were paid $25 a month, room and board. And then there were some services that were provided by people who had kids in the school. Like the first year of the school, the Mowers and the Warings each had a son, and they were pediatricians, and so they gave us medical care. Later on, Bob Shugart, who's a vet, had his kids went to the school, but even before, he gave us free veterinary care. So we had a lot of support from the community. It's amazing to me how much support people just opened up. And so the school was also a sliding scale in terms of the tuition. So we had some kids who virtually, I don't think, paid anything to come to the school. And then the children of the more professional classes, like the Mowers and the Warings, Burl Post's son, David Post, was there. They paid either full tuition or very close to full tuition for their kids.
How did you recruit students? How did the community know you were there?
It's amazing to me to think back on it. The story that I always heard about the original was that at the fair in August, at the fairgrounds, they had a booth. And that was a really productive event for the school. They had lots of people come up, very interested. But it's amazing to me that these kids, basically, I mean, 21, 22-year-olds, were given the responsibility of educating 30 children without any experience, or with very little. I mean, very little experience. I think some of the people had been teachers or counselors or things like that. But I think people really wanted something new for their kids.
You're listening to Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. I'm Kate Magruder. Let's get back to our interview with Gina Campbell of Ukiah. And once you moved out to that land on Low Gap Road,
How did you begin? How did you live? It was just a piece of land.
Well, in order to live there and develop the land, we divided up different projects, like developing water, finding out about septic systems and buildings. And fortunately, we had Michael Laybourne had worked as a draftsperson before he moved up and had skills designing and drafting plans. Billy had carpentry skills. Other people just learned on the job about water supplies. Somebody researched wells and water tanks and that kind of thing. So a bunch of people moved out to the land and started building these little one-room cabins, which are still there and still being used. And the first thing we did was Billy and Michael designed this one-room building that was started in that first summer and was able to be used in the fall, and then just had scraped together plastic tents and other places while we built the second building the next year.
And was there also a communal kitchen?
Right, yeah, there was a communal kitchen. In fact, there was this place called the Plastic Palace, which was the kitchen in the evening and was a classroom in the daytime. And then after the building, which became the K2 building, there was a little kitchen attached to the back of that. But there was no bathrooms at that time. That came later.
Were you in county or city?
We were in the county, and Billy likes to tell the story of the what he called the workshop, because it became, for a little while, it became the shop before it became the K2 building, that he made a model of it, and he and Michael took it to the building department, and that's how they got the permit for it. He did all the details, and it's actually a beautiful little building. It's a kind of a timber frame building with connectors, and it's a handmade building. The next building was a pole building, and Michael, as I said, had worked for architects in Berkeley, and one of them was Sim Vanderen, who later became the state architect. And he was interested in pole buildings, so Michael worked with him on designing a pole building for that, for the second building, and Sim Vanderen signed the plans that were submitted to the building department. And I worked on that building. I stopped teaching and worked on building that building.
How did the community, the government agencies, how did they receive you? How did they receive you as individuals around town and as a school?
Gosh. Well, the community in general was pretty supportive. And I look back on, especially the community right around us on Low Gap, there were people who had lived their whole lives out on Low Gap and were ranchers, sheep ranchers mostly, and I think we must have been a pretty big shock to them. But later on, we had some legal problems, and they were very supportive of us. As far as the building department went, the houses that were built, the little houses, were red tagged. Well, it was the pre-Class K, and actually, those houses were never put into Class K, but the school buildings were permitted.
When you think back on that time, what was a highlight? What was one of the times that you just thought, this is just so wonderful?
I actually struggled a lot. I've been wondering whether how much to talk about my own personal feelings. I moved to the school and immediately got pregnant. I later figured out that I was not a teacher, and it was a teaching community. So I didn't fit in. I think the thing that was the most important thing to me was given the opportunity to work as a carpenter and learn those skills. It was a difficult time, and I was 24 years old, and I was 23 when Rose was born, when my daughter was born that year. And balancing being a new mother, and I was still teaching, and not sure what I was doing. What in the world? What was I doing here? So that went on for a while. I was kind of displaced for quite a while. But the best thing was the community was good. We had a good time. We had a regular brunch on Sundays and then would play volleyball. There's a floodplain below the school buildings right by the creek. And it was a really good group of people when we were on Low Gap. Some of my best memories are hanging out with the people that were there.
What did you go on to do?
Well, Billy and I, we were there until 1976, but in 1975 we decided to look for a place of our own. And fortunately for us, Dave Nelson and Phyllis Webb had bought a place further out on Pine Ridge Road, 2 miles further out from the school. And they had bought it with a partner who had decided to back out. So they were looking for somebody to buy in with them. We were looking for land. So we became partners, and we're still partners with them in our property. So we then designed a house and started building it in the summer of 1976. Built and moved to the land in 76, and we're still there. Billy got his contractor's license in 1974 and started working on projects locally. We had a couple of carpenters working for him. It needed another one. So I started working for him as a carpenter in 77, I think, and worked for him for 2 years, and then decided that I needed to move on. So my skills had given me the courage to look for something in the architectural world, and fortunately I was able to get a job with Ron Moe, who is a local architect, and formally learn how to draft from him. I had done some drafting, but it was not what I learned from, I learned the real thing from Ron. And so I moved on from there into the career that I've had ever since, which is as a residential designer since 1980.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. I'm Kate Magruder, and we're hearing an interview with Gina Campbell of Ukiah.
How did you become more involved in the community?
My work in the community emerged just through word of mouth. By that time, I think Billy and I were both pretty entrenched, and I worked for Ron, but I also started getting work on the side as well. I knew other builders from Billy. He needed help with projects. I think it was through other builders, other people that I knew who through building where that started. Then of course in 1982 we were asked to design and build the Ukiah Playhouse. And I think back on that and think, I really hadn't been doing this very long. It was less than 2 years since I had started my drafting career, but we knew a lot of people who gave us a lot of help. George Rao's office, who I later went to work for, but at that point I wasn't working in his office. He provided the engineering for us, and we just tapped into our building community and came up with a lot of help, a lot of donated labor and goods for the playhouse.
What have been some of the highlights of living in this community over the years?
Well, besides the playhouse, it was definitely the highlight of my career, even though I look back and think of all the the things I could have done better. I think the highlights have been my clients. Of course, my kids grew up here and went to high school here. Even now, I'm doing a job right now for somebody that my daughter went to high school with. I did a job last year for a young woman who my son knew all the way from Mariposa all the way through high school. And that gives me a lot of pleasure to have that connection with my children's friends and to work with them on a professional level. That's been really good. And see them as adults and in their lives, that's really special.
As you look back on that and the fact that you came up, what were you thinking you were going to do with your life?
I had no idea. I had dropped out of my program to become a teacher, and then I tried to be a teacher, and I couldn't do it. It wasn't for me. And so, as I said, I was kind of lost for a while. I had been an art major. I took art classes. I even commuted to Santa Rosa for a while, taking life drawing and watercolor classes at Santa Rosa Junior College. And I thought I would get back more into that. But then I became pregnant again with my son, and I couldn't really do that trip anymore. So I don't really know. You know, I think that I lucked out by being able to see the combination of art, drafting, and building. And my father had been a builder and had encouraged me to become an architect, but I had no role models as a woman. I didn't have any role models in that way, and I thought that I had to know how to build. And so once I did know how to build, it was sort of a no-brainer. This is what I need to do. I feel lucky that I could have a career that I kind of made up in Ukiah, and I realized that I couldn't have done that if I was living in a bigger town or a city, because I found my way. I put it out that I was looking for a job as a draftsperson. I found somebody who was willing to train me, and then getting work just through friends of friends and through friends of builders and that I knew, and all that word of mouth. It's always just been word of mouth. I've never had to advertise or anything. I don't think it could have happened anywhere else except for maybe another small town like Ukiah.
How do you think the fact that so many people like you came here to this county in the early 70s, what was the impact that that had on the county over the last many decades?
The impact of the people who came here in the late 60s and in the early 70s, mid-70s, has really been tremendous. I can see that in so many different fields. I think most of the people that I have worked with and been friends with over the years were in that group that came in that time period. And if not directly in that group, I've met through other people who were in that group. And I don't even know about the coast and Anderson Valley and Willits and Laytonville. But I do know, for instance, that KZYX in some way grew out of that also. And so it has united the county in its way by being the institution that collects us all together. It's one of the institutions. And there was the Mendocino Grapevine back in the 70s and 80s that also, as a print media, was doing that. I think that was an instrumental institution that united people, that gave people a voice to connect with one another, and so people on the coast and people inland could communicate with each other and know what was going on. And KZYX, I think, took that up for the last nearly 30 years.
Was there something about this place and the physicality of this place and just the character of the place, the consciousness of the place that allowed for a theater company to spring up, or that allowed for someone like you to make up what you were going to do?
I think that the makeup of the community, and I'm thinking of the larger community of the whole county, because of the nature of the people that came here in the 60s, late 60s, 70s, with talent and vision and energy to create a world that is home for them and continues to be home for them. So that places like Ukiah Playhouse and KZYX and over on the coast, I know that there's that community has its places too. That's why I think that the impact of that movement, which I think was not really a movement, people came here because they wanted something. And not everybody got it, but a lot of people have stayed and made their lives, whether it's in the arts or in professions or in government, building, all kinds of ways that this larger community of Mendocino County has grown from that exodus from cities to what we thought was a country life. I didn't really think that so much. I just knew that I needed to get out of Berkeley and live someplace else, you know. And I go back to my childhood of growing up on the beach in Southern California, growing up on boats, and growing up in a community of my own that was not suburbia. It was, we had a lot of play and a lot of room for going out into nature, and our parents didn't rein us in. We could do what we wanted to do, and I guess that's what we were doing in that time. We were doing what we were not expected to be doing. I mean, as far as the Mariposa people went, we'd gone to Stanford, and I think that our families were kind of astounded at what we chose to do. And a lot of the original people did go back and got law degrees and medical degrees and architectural degrees, and a few people became teachers and provided an opportunity for other people to come in and take over those roles, which they continued to do for many years. It's been 48 years since the school started, and it's been 46 years since the first school building was built on the land on Logap.
Do you have a particular memory about a particular time at the school at Mariposa when you could see the kids, that it was just working? It was just exactly what the school should be?
Well, the pleasure of the kids. And I've talked to kids who went there who are now in their 40s and 50s who remember it with great fondness. You know, that was one of the best times of their lives, was when they went to Mariposa.
Is there anything else you want to say?
You know, I think that Mariposa School, 29 years, that's a lot of students who went through that school. And I think the impact on the lives of those students resonated into the community. It rippled out into the community. And there are people like David Post, who became a wonderful vocal teacher, who was one of the original students at the school. And there was Steve Grant, who became a teacher, and Sid Maurer Jr., who is a teacher. And those are just the students who were there the first year, and others who I don't know what they've done, but Sarah Walsh is a teacher at the college, went to Mariposa in my son's class. It's not, and just not just teachers, but the freedom that kids were provided, because we haven't really talked about what the philosophy was, but it was to give kids the foundation, the basics, but also give them a certain amount of latitude to make choices. And that's what the classes were that were provided for them in the afternoons. The electives. Kids in elementary school, I don't think you really get those, but and I'm not really quite clear what the philosophy was, actually, but I just know that kids who went there, most of them really loved it. And when they talk about it, you can see that they were given something that they still treasure, deeply treasure, yeah.
You've been listening to Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. We just heard from Gina Campbell. You can hear short excerpts of this program on Thursdays during Morning Edition and longer episodes Thursday afternoon at 3:30. Archives of the program, along with photos, are available at kzyx.org and the Promise of Paradise Facebook page. Promise of Paradise is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities, California Humanities, the Arts Council of Mendocino County, the Judy Pruden Historical Preservation Fund of the Community Foundation of Mendocino County, Story Center, the Mendocino Institute, and Grace Hudson Museum.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear.